Saturday, June 20th, 1942. Dearest Kitty, let me get started right away. It's nice and quiet now. Father and mother are out and Margot has gone to play ping pong with some other young people at her friend Trace. I've been playing a lot of ping pong myself lately. So much that five of us girls have formed a club. It's called the Little Dipper Minus Two. A really silly name, but it's based on a mistake. We wanted to give our club a special name. And because there were five of us, we came up with the idea of the Little Dipper. We thought it consisted of five stars, but we turned out to be wrong. It has seven, like the Big Dipper, which explains the minus two. Ilse Wagner has a ping pong set, and the Wagners let us play in their big dining room whenever we want. Since we five ping pong players like ice cream, especially in the summer, and since you get hot playing ping pong, our games usually end with a visit to the nearest ice cream parlor that allows Jews, either Oasis or Delphi. We've long since stopped hunting around for our purses or money. Most of the time it's so busy in Oasis that we manage to find a few generous young men of our acquaintance or an admirer to offer us more ice cream than we could eat in a week. You're probably a little surprised to hear me talking about admirers at such a tender age. Unfortunately or not, as the case may be, this vice seems to be rampant at our school. As soon as a boy asks if he can bicycle home with me and we get to talking, 9 times out of 10 I can be sure he'll become enamored on the spot and won't let me out of his sight for a second. His ardor eventually cools, especially since I ignore his passionate glances and pedal blithely on my way. If it gets so bad that they start rambling on about asking father's permission, I swerve slightly on my bike, my school bag falls, and the young man feels obliged to get off his bike and hand it to me. By which time, I've switched the conversation to another topic. These are the most innocent types. Of course, there are those who blow you kisses or try to take hold of your arm, but they're definitely knocking on the wrong door. I get off my bike and either refuse to make further use of their company or act as if I'm insulted and tell them in no uncertain terms to go on home without me. There you are. We've now laid the basis for our friendship. Until tomorrow, yours, Anne. Sunday, June 21st, 1942. Dearest Kitty, our entire class is quaking in its boots. The reason, of course, is the upcoming meeting in which the teachers decide who'll be promoted to the next grade and who'll be kept back. Half the class is making bets. Jeezy and I laugh ourselves sick at the two boys behind us, CN and Jacques Coquernot, who have staked their entire vacation savings on their bet. From morning to night, it's, "You're going to pass. No, I'm not. Yes, you are. No, I'm not." Even G's pleading glances and my angry outbursts can't calm them down. If you ask me, there are so many dummies that about a quarter of the class should be kept back. But teachers are the most unpredictable creatures on earth. Maybe this time they'll be unpredictable in the right direction for a change. I'm not so worried about my girlfriends and myself. We'll make it. The only subject I'm not sure about is math. Anyway, all we can do is wait. Until then, we keep telling each other not to lose heart. I get along pretty well with all my teachers. There are 9 of them, 7 men and 2 women. Mr. Keesing, the old fogey who teaches math, was mad at me for the longest time because I talked so much. After several warnings, he assigned me extra homework, an essay on the subject, a chatterbox. A chatterbox? What can you write about that? I'd worry about that later, I decided. I jotted down the assignment in my notebook, tucked it in my bag, and tried to keep quiet. That evening, after I'd finished the rest of my homework, the note about the essay caught my eye. I began thinking about the subject while chewing the tip of my fountain pen. Anyone could ramble on and leave big spaces between the words, but the trick was to come up with convincing arguments to prove the necessity of talking. I thought and thought, and suddenly I had an idea. I wrote the 3 pages Mr. Keesing had assigned me and was satisfied. I argued that talking is a female trait and that I would do my best to keep it under control, but that I would never be able to break myself of the habit, since my mother talked as much as I did, if not more, and that there's not much you can do about inherited traits. Mr. Keesing had a good laugh at my arguments, but when I proceeded to talk my way through the next class, he assigned me a 2nd essay. This time it was supposed to be on an incorrigible chatterbox. I handed it in, and Mr. Keesing had nothing to complain about for 2 whole classes. However, during the 3rd class, he'd finally had enough. Anne Frank, as punishment for talking in class, write an essay entitled, "Quack, quack, quack," said Mistress Chatterback. The class roared. I had to laugh too, though I'd nearly exhausted my ingenuity on the topic of chatterboxes. It was time to come up with something else, something original. My friend Sana, who's good at poetry, offered to help me write the essay from beginning to end in verse. I jumped for joy. Kiesing was trying to play a joke on me with this ridiculous subject, but I'd make sure the joke was on him. I finished my poem, and it was beautiful. It was about a mother duck and a father swan with three baby ducklings who were bitten to death by the father because they quacked too much. Luckily, Kiesing took the joke the right way. He read the poem to the class, adding his own comments, and to several other classes as well. Since then, I've been allowed to talk and haven't been assigned any extra homework. On the contrary, Kiesing's always making jokes these days. Yours, Anne. Wednesday, June 24th, 1942. Dearest Kitty, it's sweltering. Everyone is huffing and puffing, and in this heat I have to walk everywhere. Only now do I realize how pleasant a streetcar is, but we Jews are no longer allowed to make use of this luxury. Our own 2 feet are good enough for us. Yesterday at lunchtime I had an appointment with the dentist on Jan Lukasstraat. It's a long way from our school on Stad Stimmertownen. That afternoon, I nearly fell asleep at my desk. Fortunately, people automatically offer you something to drink. The dental assistant is really kind. The only mode of transportation left to us is the ferry. The ferryman at Josef Israelkade took us across when we asked him to. It's not the fault of the Dutch that we Jews are having such a bad time. I wish I didn't have to go to school. My bike was stolen during Easter vacation, and Father gave Mother's bike to some Christian friends for safekeeping. Thank goodness summer vacation is almost here. One more week and our torment will be over. Something unexpected happened yesterday morning. As I was passing the bicycle racks, I heard my name being called. I turned around, and there was the nice boy I'd met the evening before at my friend Wilma's. He's Wilma's second cousin. I used to think Wilma was nice, which she is, but all she ever talks about is boys, and that gets to be a bore. He came toward me, somewhat shyly, and introduced himself as Halo Silberberg. I was a little surprised and wasn't sure what he wanted, but it didn't take me long to find out. He asked if I would allow him to accompany me to school. As long as you're headed that way, I'll go with you, I said, and so we walked together. Halo is 16 and good at telling all kinds of funny stories. He was waiting for me again this morning, and I expect he will be from now on. Anne.